Good morning. We need to get started so we can hopefully end on time. Welcome to First Friday Breakfast Club. A reminder for everyone to wear your mask when you're not eating or drinking. I'm Byron Huff. I assumed the role of FFBC president this past February. My pronouns are he, him, his. At this time, I'd like to offer any new FFBC attendee to introduce themselves. Anyone like to introduce? I know we have some new people. Welcome. Any others? Okay, well, welcome everyone, and if there's someone next to you don't know, introduce yourselves. That's the best part of our in-person meetings. We missed that for over a year during the Zoom calls. Anne-Marie Cox, the communications person for Des Moines Diocese, will be taking a few photos for the diocese paper, The Catholic Mirror. Please let her know if you prefer your photo not appear in the publication. FFBC is an association of gay, bi, and trans men formed in 1996 and is a 501c3 entity, making your contributions tax deductible. Since formation, FFBC has raised more than $450,000 for scholarships awarded annually to high school seniors who have done significant things to reduce homophobia and educate on LGBTQ issues in their schools and communities. I'm congested this morning, which is normal. It's allergies. We've awarded $3,000 scholarships regardless of gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, or other protected characteristics, but we awarded nine $4,500 scholarships this past July due to the generosity of our donors. If you've not donated this year, I hope you will. You can make one-time or recurring donations on our website, ffbcio.org, thanks to technology funded by Brad Holland, Joe Rates, and Ascendant Wealth Management. We hope 2022 will allow us to present recipients their award in person during the graduation ceremony, because the real strength of the program, aside from recognizing and rewarding significant and often courageous acts of the recipients, is the opportunity for FFBC to send a representative to high school graduation ceremonies throughout Iowa. There are new member forms at the registration table. If you need to update your information or you're not on our email list, please provide that, and you will get, we only send about two emails a month. I think I had that here. We send out one for signing up and one for the newsletter. Let's see. If you've not read the November newsletter emailed November 29th and available on our website, I'd encourage you to read the articles I hope will be of interest to you. I want to give kudos to our regular newsletter contributors. Wade Peterson has done an amazing job with our newsletter, and particularly since we went to digital format. Jonathan Wilson always has an interesting topic, from the latest politics to his travels. That was the last one. Ryan Crane, FFBC Vice President, is one of the newest contributors with articles that make you think about current topics. Gary Moore has done an amazing job writing about our prayer month speaker. His articles will inform you if you missed the meeting or remind you of important takeaways if you attended. Supervisor Matt McCoy, who is not here this morning, he usually is, keeps us up to date on important issues facing Polk County. Mark Turnage gives us movie reviews, keeping you informed about some of the latest entertainment offerings. And lastly, Steve Person. Is Steve here? I haven't seen him. He's always here too. Where are these people? Steve Person gives us some very interesting book reviews. The next copy deadline for the newsletter is the second Monday prior to the breakfast meeting, which is December 27th. If you have something you'd like to share, send a copy to info@ffbciowa.org. You can designate FFBC as a beneficiary of United Way donations, and you have to write it in. Amazon also offers Amazon Smiles, which is a way of giving back to the community. So you can designate us as in that program. Our website, you'll find links to resources. We're continually adding content, and thanks to David Cotton, it's completely redone. And now there's categories. You don't just have this huge scrolling list if you've ever looked at it. Now there's drop downs for those topics, and it's much easier to navigate. We're still working on the content, so if you find anything that's inaccurate, please let us know. What else? Be sure, follow us on Facebook and YouTube, and we continue to improve our social media presence, thanks to David Cotton and Joe Rates, who manage those two things. At this time, let's see, Wade Peterson would like to make an announcement.
Good morning, everyone. Yes, I'm Wade Peterson. I'm the newsletter guy. So I'm the guy behind that thing that gets sent. Now it's been 4 years working on that. So I have a lot of fun working and putting that together. So appreciate all your contributions for that. This morning, though, I'm speaking in my other role as the operations manager for the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus. I know we have a lot of fans out there and a lot of regulars that come to all our concerts. And I just wanted to kind of remind everybody that, yes, we are back live in person. We have a concert coming up here in December. It'll be at Plymouth Church. It's on Friday and Saturday, December 17th and 18th at 7:30. It's called Love, Joy, and Peace, Moving Forward in Song. I think after this last year and a half of, you know, trying to keep it together and make things work, you know, that's moving forward in song. Some of you maybe had the chance to come to our 20th anniversary concert this last summer. That was Lauritsen Park. That was pretty amazing. Got halted a little early because of the rainstorm, but we still had a great concert. Would encourage you all to get tickets for the December show. You can do that online at our website, dmgmc.org. And you'll probably notice, if you haven't seen it yesterday, kind of the new news. We've done some shuffling around. And aside from the in-person, we are now also going to be able to live stream the concert. So if you buy a ticket, you can show up in person, but also now you're going to be able to see it online, you know, if you, you know, don't feel comfortable showing up in person. But so in person or live streaming, kind of buying the ticket, but we're excited to be back and hope you can all join us one way or another. Thank you.
Thank you, Wade. And also, I didn't hear you mention that they have a new music director. So I don't know if they actually have started yet. Has the new director started?
Eric Shepard, some of you saw it. We named our new artistic director Dr. Rebecca Gruber, who was our director for 20 years, stepped down at the end of last year. This last year, we've been doing the search process for a new person. And our new artistic director is named Eric Shepard. Eric's been around the Des Moines area for quite some time. So Eric is on board behind the scenes right now. For this concert, we have an interim conductor. His name is Eric Molis. He's the high school music director at Dallas Center Grimes. Eric Molis, lots of Erics. Eric Molis came on board. We're very thankful that he helped us out during this transition time, that helped give us the time to find our permanent Eric Shepard, who will officially assume that title on January 1st.
Okay. January 1st, he starts. I couldn't remember exactly when that was. Okay. And Ryan Crane has an announcement.
Hi, friends. So tonight at the Des Moines Playhouse, just down the street from Rick's house, and I think a couple of others of you live in that general area as well, the Des Moines Playhouse, we will premiere The Sound of Music. It is our holiday musical. Lots of opportunities to see it. It's Thursdays and Fridays at 7 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. and 5 p.m., so plenty of opportunities. Harold is a rock star volunteer at the Playhouse. So very grateful for anybody who can come make it. It is the largest musical we've done indoors since the pandemic, And a couple of the shows are actually close to selling out. So we're back to normal, masks required at the Playhouse, and would love to see some of you there. Tickets at dmplayhouse.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Iowa Stage Theater also is back to live, and we attended one recently. So like to support our entertainment options in Des Moines. We're fortunate to have all that. And now Brad Holland will introduce our speaker.
Good morning, everyone. This morning, I'm very pleased that we will be addressed by the Most Reverend William M. Johnson, who was installed as the 10th bishop of the Diocese of Des Moines on September 27th, 2019. Bishop Johnson completed studies at the Pontifical College Josephinum in Ohio in 1989, earned a doctorate in philosophy at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. in 2001. He was a member of the philosophy faculty at Loras College, where he served in a variety of roles, including the Dean of Spiritual Life for the campus. In addition to assisting in various other functions, he on healthcare-related ethics committees, then Father Johnson participated in 12 summers as a faculty member for the Tertio Millennio, which I understand in Latin means third millennium, seminar in Krakow, Poland, which draws young people and adults from the United States, Poland, and Eastern and Central Europe, exploring Catholic social teachings in the spirit of St. John Paul II. Bishop Johnson grew up in Ames. His father was served in the military, and following his military service, landed at ISU as a member of the faculty in mechanical engineering. He only recently passed at the age of 88. His mother, however, is still at home and is in Ames. Please join me in welcoming Bishop Johnson.
Thank you, Brad and Byron and Jonathan Wilson, who extended the initial invitation to me. I got a glimpse of that. That's a really turgid introduction. Can we just cut that down a little bit? But, as my dad as an engineer, he would say, oh, this philosophy stuff makes me nervous. That's the other side of the campus. So I hope you don't feel intimidated. Once in studies, I was home for the holidays and was rerouted on my way back. And so I was on an old Northwest Airlines flight and Senator Orrin Hatch from Utah was on there, and we got chatting with each other. He says, oh, philosophy, that'll make you lose your faith, won't it? And I said, well, no, it's actually enhancing it. Of course, I was in my 30s then. So I think, the perspective and the real life experience, both as a parish priest and other things, which allowed me to offer this. So I was kind of piqued by your comment, as you said, the topic interests you. I don't know that there was a published topic, because a week ago, I was probably still reflecting on where we would go today. And so, as we head into December, the music, which lifts our souls and enhances our sense of world and helps us slip beyond ourselves, and artists can do that for us as well. But it's a season, a spiritual season, whatever our own particular religious sentiments are and the dispositions that we have. So it's a little bit of a spiritual reflection that I would like to offer you, with a kind of philosophical foundation that we might be. Just what does it mean to be human, and how in our own individual lives, our body beings, and our connection with each other in relationships? And so the horizon for me as a Catholic Christian and a shepherd of souls is obviously the belief, the claim that God became man, and that so much of our music tries to capture this mystery, but can never exhaust that. And so that's kind of the backdrop. And in this splendid setting, if I seem to go off into the ether, well, then you've got lots of beautiful art to meditate upon, and I will not be offended. Yesterday, speaking at the Dowling Catholic High School Christmas luncheon out at Glen Oaks, and I made a pivotal mistake. I was asked to lead the prayer, and then I was supposed to give about a 15-minute talk, and I said, you know, please feel free to tuck into your salad and everything else. And well, people just proceeded to start talking with each other and basically blew me off, you know, through the course of it. So my 15-minute talk became an 8-minute talk probably, as I couldn't fight it. So your graciousness and your hospitality are very much appreciated. So I just put, and you have a handout. And again, I'm not going to exhaustively read all this there. I just thought sometimes I like to have some of the quotes or things that maybe were part of my inspiration. It's available for you to chew on if you'd like afterwards. Hopefully I won't see them strewn throughout the parking lot when I go back to my car. So repurpose it, if you will, after you do that. But this poem by Louise Gluck, one of my favorite poets, Gemini. And as she's kind of speaking, and we'll just read that briefly here, there's a soul in me. It's asking to be given its body. It's asking to be given blue eyes, a skull matted with black hair, that shape already formed and detaching. So the past put forth a house filled with asters and white lilac, a child in her cotton dress, the lawn, the copper beach. Such of my own lives I have cast off, the sunlight chipping at the curtains, and the wicker chairs uncovered winter after winter as the stars finally thicken and descend as snow. Lots of evocative images there. And, you know, I have enough philosophy to be dangerous. I'm tracing a kind of platonic flavor to what she's speaking. But Gemini, the twins, the soul and the body as twins, as kind of separate things, as Plato kind of thought that we could kind of recycle through our various existences. And what is that relationship? Is it one of friendship between the soul and the body? Is it one of not separate things, but of an inherent relationship that one without the other is incomplete as human beings? Embedded always in the culture that preceded us, the culture that has been handed over to us, the things that both draw from, that give meaning and help us interpret our own lives and the questions that we pose. And at the same time can be sources of myopia, can be things that limit it or offer blind spots for us as we go along. And so our call always is to be stretched, to go on, to be able to enter into the things that seem impenetrable in themselves, the mystery that surrounds us, and to do so with a certain intrepid spirit, but to do so never alone, never alone, hopefully always accompanying each other and finding those with whom we feel a certain kindred spirit and those for whom their otherness is so conspicuous in all that we're about. How do we pause and revere and respect in such a way then that the opening of that mystery on its own terms, without a kind of spiritual or moral violence, as our own inherent dignity, our own aspirations, but hopefully that human connection that continues to grow among us in a very tenuous way in our country, our society, and yes, our church, even, you know, for those of us who are believers who affiliate in any way. So, you know, I don't know when Bishop Pates appeared here, what his topic was, if he was reflecting on Pope Francis's message on the environment, our common home. That's something that continues to challenge us. How are we stewards of this world as we find our place in it and not simply dominating it? But a year ago, in the midst of the pandemic, he released a message in Assisi, drawing from that spirit of his namesake, Francis. And he's saying, you know, fratelli tutti, you know, we are all sisters and brothers. And it offered many substantive things that delved into, you know, both politics, the economy, and other facets of human life, but in a way I think that could be met by persons of all goodwill and wasn't necessarily predicated on explicitly Christian claims. And so the sense then that, you know, our lives in the body are not just kind of a transient affair. We know, and we were talking about at the table here, you know, the vagaries of growing in years and things and the toll that that takes, but hopefully at the same time growing in wisdom and the blessings even that we might find in our vulnerability, And this is a call again to deepen connection with each other, that as our bodies are given to us, the ways that we continue to see our bodies then as a way that we go out of ourselves, a kind of theater, if you will, of receptivity for the world and a kind of liminal locus where both we draw into ourselves, but then we have that opportunity to slip beyond ourselves, an engagement of transcendence and all that we're about. And so I think that way then in which Pope Francis speaks to us, made so we can't live and find fulfillment except in offering ourselves as gift to each other. I'm going to be visiting a group of religious sisters next Monday in Ann Arbor, Michigan, trying to recruit them to come to the Des Moines Diocese to teach in some of our parochial schools. I'm going to offer to them an icon of St. Dominic that was given to me and by a person in Neola, Iowa. Beautiful. It's got St. Francis just, or St. Dominic just, you know, whispering, you know, be silent, be silent. Kind of hard to do in these weeks leading up to Christmas, isn't it? But I'm re-gifting her, you know, and it'll be full disclosure when I do so, you know, that which is entrusted to me to offer again and to be transparent about that. And that way then that our body is entrusted to us, our parents, each of us has a navel that explains our part of our existence that we received from another, and that we give ourselves from these encounters that we have as we communicate ourselves and the beauty that we find, having real faces to love and the mystery of human existence, so that the bonding and communion and fraternity that we establish ultimately sets us up for something that our mere mortality cannot truncate, cannot shorten, but ultimately points to a horizon beyond ourselves. And so to isolate ourselves, as we're tempted to do, you know, if we live in a world where grandmothers can be mowed down in a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin, they could be over in an instant. All of us know that temptation once in a while to withdraw into the fetal position and just kind of protect ourselves from the world. I mean, with or without a global pandemic, and perhaps to, you know, to in that fetal position, just to hold on to our favorite anesthetic and just kind of check out for a while. But again, I think our own hearts, our own souls, restless as they are, calling us to go beyond. And so this fundamental sense that we are not kind of autonomous atoms, you know, the quote that Pope Francis makes in relating, you know, that we're not, as the German philosopher Gottfried Leibniz said, we're not monads, kind of peering back from our little observation post with a little window on the world where we can take it all in, but kind of, again, insulated from others, protected from the possible incursions in our vulnerability and kind of having it all sufficient within ourselves. And so I think, hopefully I'm just affirming what you already instinctively, intuitively recognize, your presence here this morning, the ways in which you connect and network with others, but to see this as part of our human dignity and the basis, the foundation for the rights that we enjoy, the rights that are ours by virtue of being human. But always, as we recognize these in ourselves, the concurrent claim and recognition in the other, in the human faces that we acknowledge, masked or not, that we are called to be about. And so human dignity, this irreplaceable value of each and every individual, simply by virtue of being who he or she is, even as we come to sometimes struggle with that, to discover what we affirm in ourselves, or perhaps revisit and come to see ourselves in a new light at different times. And so the rights that we have and the claim that enjoys with each other, I think there's a happy middle ground in the sensibilities that we have to maybe arrive at in our way. Robert Spemann, the late German philosopher, who died just a few years ago, he looks at the German Constitution and it says, you know, human dignity is inalienable, it reads in the German Constitution. Human dignity is inalienable. And you can have different interpretations of that. You might have the maximal interpretation, which would say that anything the person lays claim to, health, education, other forms of social support, we're obliged to offer that to them. And I think that's where in our society, again, let the political discourse and debate continue on some of these fronts. Are we obliged to provide free university education for everybody or not? To what extent does that continue? Are there limits on what might happen in the realm of healthcare? What kind of surgeries people are entitled to? There's a minimal interpretation there, is that basically dignity means just leave people alone. They're subjectively, whatever they decide for themselves is to be honored and respected on its own terms, which can challenge us at times. Are there ways in which we are not our own friends at times, and that the decisions we make are not always life-giving, contributing to our flourishing in some way? I was really, just really saddened to hear a fellow who had helped us here. He came, he belongs to a national organization, basically did an intervention with one of our priests, and that's had a happy outcome. One of our priests kind of went off for a period of time for a wellness program, and now he's back in the saddle. And by all rights, he's kind of a new man. He's much more relational, much more going outside of himself. But as I spoke to Jerry, I said, Jerry, how's it been going? I haven't seen you for a couple of years. He said, you know, I and my wife, we went back to Ireland in the midst of the pandemic. We just decided that's where we're going to be. And but he said, I came home one day, my wife, a very successful and, assertive attorney. I came home and she had hung herself. She'd hung herself. And he said, that will to die was so great that the level from which she hung herself, she could have just put her feet on the floor and stood up. And it's just that someone reaches that point where to cancel one's own existence in that way, how much the affliction of soul must have been weighing upon her. But is this something that we would just respect on its own terms, or would we say, is there any way that we can walk with you, that we can accompany you, that we can help you to affirm who you are and the life that you presently know? And so again, not monads in the ethic, the anthropology that we propose, but that we allow ourselves then to be drawn into to deeper connections that can weather some of these storms of the soul in this particular way. Well, Francis notes, you know, as we think about different levels of association, different societies to which we belong, our families, our local community of friends, voluntary organizations, you know, the choir that is itself a group that not simply for the sake of the performance, but I would imagine draws a certain kind of life from just being with each other and exercising one's gifts, for sake of something greater than oneself, a common good in which one participates with one's own unique gifts, whether one is an alto, a baritone, or a tenor in any way, participated diversely, but for the sake of some good that can't come into being unless we are all involved, engaged in some way. But sometimes those societies that we belong to, we know they can be suffocating, or there can be a kind of, as Pope Francis says in number 146 in Fratelli Tutti, a certain local narcissism, which is not that pride of the community and the soil from which one has sprung, but a kind of way in which life is no longer able to flow and flourish as it might. And so I love now, in the wake of the pandemic, to finally, I was kind of put on hold as a young bishop, not able to go out and be with the people. You know, and I hadn't gone out to the parish. That's 5 months and we shut everything down. But, you know, the fabric of the different communities, their personalities, I love it. The faith is very robust and strong, but there's also a lot of fear there too. Fear as their children and grandchildren migrate to more metropolitan areas, the life is no longer there. And also a certain, maybe at times, wariness. Even though those who might join them, who come from Mexico or other places or other countries, a A third of our clergy are from international countries, countries who come to be with us. And yeah, there's a period of adjustment that we need to help each other there to be receptive to that. And I think, you know, where it goes well, they come to really irrigate, if you will, the livelihood and the goodness, the diversity that is present in these communities. But when it doesn't go well, I think we can attribute it to some of this local narcissism of which Pope Francis speaks. I was touched very much last weekend. One of our priests, Father Clement from Ghana, preached a homily at the funeral mass of one of our most senior priests, Father Paul Koch, because they had formed a deep bond of friendship in the 2 years that they'd lived with each other. And so that was a beautiful thing. And he spoke very movingly in a way that I think helps us to overcome and be enriched. So a kind of local narcissism, which frets over a limited number of ideas, customs, and forms of security. Those of you who've had the fortune of living in different locations internationally or to travel extensively, you know, I think we gain a different lens and a different perspective. We recognize our own vulnerability and that sometimes we might extend trust and it doesn't necessarily go well. And that desire to simply be accepted, our dignity recognized and respected, this is a work in progress for all of us, that sometimes the wounds that occur early on in our lives, we bear with and continue to have some of our responses be colored by what we're about. Bernard Bonowitz is a man I'm fond of quoting. He grew up Jewish in the New York City area. Ultimately became Catholic, but he reflects on the story when he was 16 years old, a pretty bright young man. He went to a Columbia University summer institute. The young people at our Poland Institute were usually in their 20s or so, so they'd already kind of come into their own a little bit professionally in the things that are about. But he said, I was walking each night, and I'd go out for a walk with this Jewish guy from Chicago, and he himself was Jewish. We were both 16, and at one point, the other fellow says, let's tell each other the worst thing we've ever done in our lives. And Bernard said, why would we want to do that? And he says, literally, this guy responded, because we all live covered by seven veils, nobody knows anyone else, and there cannot be any genuine human friendship because it's all show and gauze and veil. He said, there really are some people who talk like they dropped in out of a Dostoevsky novel once in a while. So it didn't seem to be anything he was thinking, but all right. So he said, we're going to do it. So you go first, he told the other guy. So he told him the worst thing that he had ever done. And he's like, no big deal. No big deal, you know, nothing much. And so the guy said to him, you can still be my friend? He says, yes, I'm your friend. I accept you. And so he says, okay, it doesn't change anything. So now it's your turn. So Bernard told him the worst thing he's ever done. And the guy responded to him, I can't be your friend anymore. Excuse me? Not if you did that. I couldn't be a friend of a person who's done something like that. But I appreciate your transparency, and I do wish you all the best. That's the last time they ever spoke, even though they ended up going to the same institution for 4 years of higher education. So, you know, that wound of that lack of unconditional acceptance, you know, as our story comes to take shape and that we become bold enough to disclose our story and find a rootedness and hopefully a resonance with one another along the way. I'm told as a digital immigrant that the digital natives among us, our younger people, that the importance of narrative is pivotal. There has to be a story. And the subjective story carries its own truth. It carries its own truth. But at the same time that we are called then to see, you know, if there's to be genuine empathy, genuine solidarity of spirit, is there something fundamentally human that we can identify with and recognize and see ourselves at home with each other as the wicker chairs continue to absorb the snow and as we move forward. And so our presence in the body, the narrative that it conveys in and of itself of a participation in humanity that's long preceded us, but of which we at our own particular moment in history now have a deliberative and a call and a challenge to do our part to hopefully lift each other up and to bring this forward in a certain way. I'm recognizing that the time is waning here. And again, you know, the old teacher, you know, different benchmarks of clocks, 10 minutes, 50 minutes, or things that go on that way. But somebody whom I found that after his death was his own kind of personal disorder, if you will. He was seen as quite a spiritual figure, but his own kind of manipulation of power and relationships was very grievous to many of us, myself, who respected him, but Jean Vanier, French-Canadian, who founded the ARC communities for the disabled. But a great theme that he has that I think has really kind of guided and oriented me in my life post is he speaks about the way in which those ways in which we know human acceptance and solidarity, but also that kind of core loneliness, because our capacity for transcendence is almost infinite. And so our longing for something that goes beyond anything this world can serve up to us, even with our own human loves and human friendships. And so he said, we have to resist this tendency of the local narcissism. That's not his phrase, it's Pope Francis's. And to be willing then to move into the disorder of unknowing, the mystery that surrounds us in a way. And so we can create order, and this is necessary for our lives to flourish. But if at any point we kind of reify that and petrify that, life will begin to wane and no longer flow. I was by chance at a recovery facility last weekend. A woman was out running outside on the grounds, and then she was inside, and then she heard the bishop was there, and she came up and asked me for a blessing. Ellie, not her real name, asked for a blessing and confided that she's from the Des Moines metro area, a couple kids in our parochial schools, but there was a lot of fear on her face as she's taken this step to say, I'm an alcoholic, I need help, and entering into a place where hopefully she can find the support she needs. But a life that had received a certain kind of ordering, but now called to step into a new disorder from her own perspective. And ultimately, as a Christian and in the wake of the Christmas season, that's what I believe God has done. He stepped into our world, our murkiness, the messiness that is here. He allowed himself to become vulnerable. And yes, he knew it all in his perspective as God. But now the feeling and the experience that Jesus brings to us in this way. And so I think that unconditional acceptance, which is grounded, and that's for me the message of silent hope as a kind of a horizon that I would bring for others, the sense that when the night was half spent, he descended like snow falling on a wicker chair. Thank you. I know for the record, I began about 7:30, so we were well through, but I'm told some time open to comments, questions, anything that like. We have one in the back there. Yes, please. I mean, that's what I hope ultimately is the perception and the proclamation, the good news, if you will, that we live. Now this, you know, again, what does human dignity entail in maximal or minimal senses? And do we feel that challenge, each of us, for a certain kind of conversion of mind and heart in the perspective of tendering that to each other? So, and the church is not there. I'm still in need of conversion, I think, where does that begin? Dialogue and engagement and listening to one another. Yes.
So
Wow. And again, I mean, a certain scientific background, but I don't bring, you know, some of the technical awareness that would be here. But I think, you know, Pope Francis is always going to issue a personal call to conversion of our own lifestyles and the things we rely upon, you know, the kind of throwaway culture that he says, and he's concerned about throwing away persons. But I think, you know, is there that sense of just, you know, unlimited consumption, you know, one point where I think my dad, from his perspective now, I'd be very interested to know, as he died 3 years ago, he was all about coal-fired generation, all about coal-fired generation, a big proponent of coal-fired power plants. He always said wind energy generation is never going to be profitable on its own terms. It's always going to be subsidized. So I wonder if he's had a little change of perspective in that regard. But I think, you know, are there, you know, are those the renewable sources that we need to continue to? But I'm thinking now, what's this winter going to be like for people who have limited means, you know, and the rise in prices and everything else? So if we're going to price ourselves in a place where there's a political disincentive to use, you know, fossil fuels or other things, where then as a community are we willing to find the political ways to provide that social support for people whom just heating their house this winter is going to be a daunting challenge? So the personal conversion met with the kind of political advocacy and agency, but, you know, to the extent that we can bear some of that cost as individuals and not simply pass it down to those who are most vulnerable. That's a short answer, but yeah. Yes. Well, I think that's obviously that's the thorny question in this. I think the church is always, and as a shepherd and one who wears the office of bishop, to be a steward of the tradition. What do we believe God has disclosed to us about his plan for human flourishing, our identity, male, female? Does that have an imprint ultimately in terms of how, not only for the perpetuation of the race, but our own personal fulfillment? And so is there something inscribed in us by virtue of our sexual identity in terms of then our participation? And ultimately, how does that resonate with or find itself in tension with the call to ultimate friendship? You know, that marriage in itself is not just friendship plus sexual activity. Are there certain relationships ultimately that call to transcendence is a call to deep abiding, soul-filling accompaniment and offering oneself as complete gift that doesn't necessarily entail genital sexuality, you know? And so the celibacy which I have committed myself to is hopefully a sign indicating the hope for our ultimate destiny for all of us that doesn't see this as an ultimate necessity. Now that's a voluntary choice on my part. You know, that, you know, to be a eunuch for the kingdom, you know, hopefully is not trying to say, you know, where am I on a certain spectrum of sexual identity, but pointing beyond that. So that, I think, is where, you know, it will be hard ever, I think, from the Catholic Christian perspective, and I think Pope Francis has ratified this, to say that, you know, people who are called to deep abiding friendship, but is there a certain privilege given to heterosexual marriage as a way that is in accord with God's providential plan for humanity and for the salvation of individuals. Yes.
Dialogue between the church and
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be hard pressed to say, you know, as I look from the Catholic Christian perspective, what kind of systematic things are going on in our local community. I think this happens in local churches, and Pope Francis, as he offers his comments, sometimes off the cuff, which sometimes I think are, you know, sound bites lifted in context. We always want to take it in the whole of what he said, you know, and his documentary producers have kind of spliced together different segments. But, you know, sometimes it's just that grassroots dialogue, you know, the same-sex couple with the children in one of our parochial schools. You know, some of the administrators, myself, just sat down as they were there and said, just tell us about, you know, your hope and why you see this as a desirable option for you. Tell us how you can honor our mission and who we are, and that this can be something that we can accompany each other. And I think we reached a very happy point of listening to each other, you know, in that regard. So I think other Christian communities, denominations, you know, have moved to a place where there's an unquestioning affirmation of all such relationships. That the Catholic community is, you know, there are different people, you know, representing that, speaking that, but as an institution, that's not where we are. And I think it's a challenge to look for further opportunities. So there's a kind of individual ad hoc occasions where this happens, but the dialogue that goes on, Conference of Catholic Bishops, you know, trying to again bring to bear some of the insights and some of the pastoral messages of this Pope and previous Popes, but groups such as Dignity and others that provide support, more present in larger metropolitan areas. There isn't a flourishing chapter here, but that people are saying, how do I unite and synthesize the claims of my faith and my own call to human happiness? No, there isn't, you know, and, you know, I know Father Bachansky, you know, is a national moderator, and I've, you know, interviewed him on my radio show and everything else, and I, you know, I think that's a pastoral need.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Bishop. We certainly appreciate your joining us this morning. We've heard the Pope indicate acceptance of some same-sex couples' existence and that they need to be loved. But then he seems to backtrack and say the Church doesn't accept same-sex marriage. We hope growth will change that. As we live our lives day to day, we continually learn and grow because the human experience is complicated. Life's a journey and everyone has their own unique path. Reminders, January 7th, Lauren Olson, award-winning author of the book, Finally Out, and a new book soon to be released, No More Neckties, will be our speaker. February 4th will be Edward Kelly, who had an opinion piece in the Des Moines Register on September 5th, of this year, titled My Journey from Anti-Gay Activist to LGBTQ Ally. Interesting article. March 4th will be Mark Babcock, who sang with Leonard Bernstein and Robert Shaw and has performed at Carnegie Hall and the New York Philharmonic, will speak about playing the Carillon at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. See our website with a link to the Des Moines Register article about him. April 1 will be David Miglin. He's a member of Broadlawn's Medical Center Board and recently completed his mission of visiting every incorporated city or town in the state of Iowa. He's also involved in the Iowa Stage Theater Company. May 6th will be Eric Shepard, the new artistic director and conductor of the Gay Men's Chorus. June 4th will be, which is our annual scholarship award ceremony, if everything goes as planned, this year was a little different, will be Becky Smith, who is executive director of
Iowa Safe Schools. See our website for more detail on upcoming speakers. And I shall also welcome suggestions of potential speakers, but I feel good about having half the year already booked. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend, a Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year. Our meeting's adjourned.